The role of contemporary art in Maine today. This past weekend marked the grand reopening of the Center for Maine Contemporary Art. The CMCA moved from its former location in Rockport to a brand new building in the heart of Rockland's Arts District, designed by a renowned modern architect. 1,700 people attended its opening. This is the most recent and most visible addition to the contemporary art scene in Maine, but it's not alone. Museums and galleries all over the state have been building their commitment to contemporary art. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll talk with the CMCA's executive director, Suzette McAvoy, the director of the Bates College Museum of Art, Dan Mills, and Maine sculptor and installation artist Lauren Fensterstock about contemporary art in Maine and what it means for the state's culture and future. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Maine has long been famous for extraordinary painters. Think Frederick Church, Winslow Homer, Rockwell Kent, or of course, the Wyeth family. But what about contemporary artists who, say, create abstract sculpture or large-scale installation works? What kind of place is Maine for a contemporary artist or a contemporary art lover? Today, we'll discuss this with three experts on the topic. With me in the studio, Suzette McAvoy. She is director of the just reopened Center for Maine Contemporary Art, located in Rockland. Lauren Fensterstock is an artist, writer, curator, critic, and educator. And Dan Mills is director of the Bates College Museum and an active and successful studio artist. As always, want to hear from you. Are you a fan of contemporary art? Where do you like to see it? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. So excited to have all three of you here with me in the studio.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Suzette, congratulations on the opening this past weekend. I understand it was really exceeded expectations in such a big way. What is the role and the mission of the CMCA, and how is that better served in its new location?
Well, thank you. It was an extraordinary weekend, and what a celebration. The weather couldn't have been more perfect, and we had an enormous crowd, almost 1,700 people over the course of yesterday, Sunday, when we had the dedication ceremony and the grand opening. The role of the Center for Maine Contemporary Art is advancing contemporary art in Maine through exhibitions and educational programs. And we do that by showing the work of artists that have a strong tie to Maine that maybe stretches our idea of what art is, what it can be, and what it's made out of. So it's really the idea of letting people here in the state know that the work of contemporary art is and artists here is very alive and very connected with the global market.
And how long has this been in the making? How long have you been planning for this new museum, this new building in Rockland?
Well, we bought the property in May of 2014. So it's been about 18 months that the actual construction has been happening. So it's been a fairly wild ride. It's been a very, very concentrated time. But the idea of moving to Rockland has been something that the board has considered off and on really over the last 20 years. The Center for Maine Contemporary Art has been around since 1952. And previously, we were located in a very historic residential neighborhood in Rockport. It was a charming facility, but really not one that had great visibility. There was no parking, very little foot traffic. And so the idea of moving to Rockland, where there's much more of a commercial gallery scene, the Farnsworth Art Museum and the Strand, was something that had been considered off and on. But really the right moment didn't appear until this property on Winter Street became available.
Congratulations to you. Dan, how is the mission and role of the CMCA similar or different than the role of the Bates Museum?
Well, the Bates Museum's mission is to bring a world of ideas to Bates, Lewiston Auburn, and to the state of Maine. And we do that through exhibitions of artists of national and international renown. We do it through developing a collection, educational programs, and the stewardship of all of these things.
How long has the Bates Museum been focused on contemporary art?
Well, it's the museum itself formed in 1986, and the focus isn't exclusively on contemporary art. But I would say at least the last two directors have primarily focused on the art of our time, or as I tell students, your time.
The art of your time. I like that. Lauren, you've been working as an artisan educator in Maine for almost two decades now. Is that right?
That's correct.
Is this a good place to be a contemporary artist, especially compared to bigger cities such as maybe New York or L.A.?
It is. I find, there are obstacles and benefits of being here. Maine has had such a rich history of artists. It's a wonderful space to be an artist. Just physically, it's an inspiring, gorgeous environment. And the access to space. Artists are always desperate for real estate. And having grown up in New York, to be able to come to a place where I can have the space to play, where institutions are also accessible. There are other challenges. I think one of the benefits of Maine, as well, is its role as a part of the world. I think we think of Maine as a kind of regional art community, but so many artists, curators, thinkers, scholars move through this space. And I think our role as a port is an important one that I think is often underestimated.
And we're having this conversation. You're just back, speaking of international, from a bit of an international excursion yourself. Tell me about it.
Yes, I've been on the road this whole spring. I've been in and out of the state. I just installed an exhibition at the Museum Rijswijk in The Hague, and then flew straight from 10 days of installing a very laborious, intensive project to the mountains of North Carolina, where I taught a two-week workshop on idea development at the Penland School of Crafts. And I'm just back in Maine for the first time since May. So getting my feet again.
Well, I'm so glad you're back in time to be with us. Dan, you're working as an artist as well as a curator. In your view, what are the advantages and disadvantages of being based in Maine, following up on what Lauren's saying?
Oh, gosh. One of the things, as probably the newcomer amongst this group, I've been here about 6 years. One thing that really distinguishes Maine from other places that I've lived and worked is that there is this real sense of community that is statewide amongst artists and the institutions, which is unlike anywhere I've ever lived. So one of the benefits is to really feel like you're part of an art and cultural community, and that people care, know about what you're doing, will drive several hours to go to an opening or to go to studios. I suppose there could be disadvantages with the being spread out, not being a city, but I mean, it's such a destination state. And as Lauren mentioned, so many people come through here who are art interested. So I'm not sure that it's so much a disadvantage.
Suzette, I'm sure you had to crunch a lot of numbers as you set off on this journey to build the new CMCA. What gave you the confidence that there would be the audience and financial support to make it happen?
Well, I've been involved with the art scene here in Maine for well over 20 years, starting as curator at the Farnsworth Museum back in 1988. And I have been continually surprised and really admire the number of artists and supporters here for art in the state. It's really extraordinary. It's what Dan said. Every other place that I've lived and been involved with the arts, I've never seen this kind of commitment and passion among the art community and the supporters of it here, as in Maine. And so I knew that if we created a venue and a platform that was really world-class, that there was the talent and the energy here in Maine to support it. And because I knew these artists, and I knew that there was this richness and this depth to the art scene here in Maine that just needed a venue to really showcase it to the world. And the new CMCA was really built with that in mind. We tapped a world-class architect, Toshiko Mori, who has deep ties here to Midcoast Maine, having had a home on North Haven Island for over 30 years. And with Toshiko's prominence within the architecture world and her experience in designing museum spaces, We've gotten this extraordinary platform now that I think will really put Maine on a map in a way that it hasn't been before.
It's interesting to me that used to be at the Farnsworth, which does display a great deal of what many people think of when they think of Maine art, whether it's in the Wyeth family or Marston Hartley or Winslow Homer. Is the audience the same or different for the CMCA?
Yeah, I think it's really a continuation. You know, I always tell people all art is contemporary once. You know, when you think about the artists that have come through Maine, people like Thomas Cole and Frederick Church, Marston Hartley, the Zoracs, they were all cutting edge in their time. They were pushing the envelope. John Marin, you know, some of these names that are now household names and that we accept as, you know, traditional Maine artists, they were really at the forefront of contemporary art in their day. And so some of the people that have been associated with CMCA since the beginning, people like Robert Indiana and Louise Nevelson, and, you know, even Jamie Wyeth had a show at CMCA back in 1964. So there's an extraordinary number of artists that have gotten their start at CMCA.
All right. Lauren, I want to talk a little bit about your work that you do. And actually, you too, Dan. Tell me about the inspiration. Especially because your work, some of it, your installation work, is obviously takes a lot of hours, thousands of hours to put together. Where does the seed come from? How do you end up in the museum in The Hague with your installation work?
Yeah, well, I always say I think I'm Maine's strangest landscape artist.
And we should explain. I would start to explain. So these are very intricate, but also very large. Is it a garden that you have in The Hague, or is it that's what I saw?
The piece in The Hague, it's called Colorless Field, and it looks like an incredibly large field of grass, but in this case, the entire landscape is entirely black. There are pools of water which are made of black plexiglass, and the whole piece is hand-cut paper, so it's thousands of blades of paper grass. And a lot of my work looks at the history of gardens or more recently caves, but I'm very interested in the history of nature. Maine is also known as a place where people have come to work in and of nature. And I would say my interest is less in being in nature or observing nature, but looking at the ways in which nature has functioned as a cultural metaphor. So I always say I'm less interested in being in the forest than reading a story about being in the forest and seeing the things that nature has symbolized.
Well, that's terrific. We posted a video from 2012 on our MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page. So if you'd like to see Lauren and get a little taste of her work. And we also posted an article about Dan's work that Bob Keyes for the Portland Press Herald wrote about you. Tell me about how you get your inspiration, Dan, especially balancing it with the job of being a museum director. When do you find time for inspiration?
Well, I guess being a director and having a position that's very curatorial satisfies another creative part of me as somebody who's a part of the art world. I get a great delight. I learn. It makes me kind of grow and expand and know the world that I've basically devoted my life to in a different way. And I think it feeds my art, which I think that probably the most important tool is my brain. So having and looking at and thinking about art and artists really, you know, fuels my work.
I want to broaden this a little bit and say that I think that a lot of people are intimidated by contemporary art. Maybe they walked into one gallery once or a museum space once, didn't understand what was going on, and maybe never went back. So who wants to jump in and give us a little primer for newbies? If someone is brand new to CMCA, Suzette, or Dan, if someone's brand new to the Bates, what do you hope that put them in the right frame of mind to sort of take in contemporary art for the first time?
One thing I think of with contemporary art is that for those who aren't so familiar or haven't experienced it so often, that if they approach it not with the idea that it answers things to them, but instead that it may raise questions and raise thoughts and ideas, whether it doesn't matter where it is, whether it's the CMCA or Bates or some of our other kind of contemporary focused institutions. So it's okay to walk in and not be sure, and it's okay to not think that it's solving something, but maybe making you wonder. I think that's perhaps a good place to start.
Suzette?
Yeah, well, the new CMCA has really been designed to address exactly this issue or this problem. It's the entire building is transparent. It was really designed with the idea of turning a traditional museum inside out. You think of the formal facade of like the Metropolitan Museum or the Philadelphia Museum of Art, this sort of temple of art on high with the big imposing staircase. And, you know, it's really to suggest that it's, you know, offset, off-putting and, you know, removed from everyday life. But the new CMCA is absolutely on street level. There's a central courtyard that really invites the public to enter the museum space without before they even come inside. It's surrounded by three glass walls, so you can see the art before you even get inside. You can see us working even. It's to really show that the art is very much a part of the community and a part of our everyday life. And I always say that with any artwork, actually, there's really no right or wrong way to look at art except the dismissive way. If you dismiss it before you allow it to at least raise questions or you know, going to something and say, well, I don't like contemporary art, before you even give it a chance to speak to you. So I always say to people, go with an open mind, look and see, maybe there's something there that resonates with you. Not everyone will like everything. There is a matter of taste that comes into it, but it is there to provoke questions and prompt us to look at the world in a new way.
You want to jump in, Lauren?
Absolutely. I think, you know, art's role isn't to be pleasing. It's to form a dialogue. And dialogues are sometimes challenging or unpleasant. And I think they're seen from many perspectives. And so, you know, when I put a work into a space, it can be a challenging experience. I think one of the exciting things about CMCA opening is its ability to take a risk. So many institutions are centered around collections and works that are already proven. And I think it takes an innovative kind of installation space to support new work that will raise new questions that may or may not be successful. And regardless of that, still be important and still give us a chance to talk about how we find meaning in the world, what ideas we share, and what ideas we don't share.
Lauren, let me ask you a question. When you have an exhibit, do you stand there invisibly and tell people watch your work, or do you say, no way, I'm out of here?
Well, I wish I could stand there invisibly.
or you know, sort of try to blend in and watch how people respond to it?
Yes. I mean, I've had so many funny experiences. I remember being in an opening once where someone said, you know, your work is good, but I prefer Renoir. You know, and what do you say? I don't know. And, you know, people, because of the tone of my work, the sort of overwhelming black, it can be very sort of frightening or off-putting. Some others find it magical. I love those conversations. I think I'm a little bit hardened. You know, you have a couple of challenging reviews in newspapers and on blogs. Mm-hmm. And it can be hard. I mean, I certainly sometimes go home and like binge eat Fritos. But
what about you, Dan? Are you going to confess to binge eating Fritos when you've got a big show?
Oh, I don't know if Fritos would be the binge of choice.
Do you ever try to interact quietly and see how people are responding to your work?
Not really, but on the other hand, sometimes we're put in that position. I mean, that's what openings tend to do, and not everybody knows who the artist is. So, one can kind of be the voyeur and hear responses or observe responses, which is kind of fascinating.
I'm not sure I should confess this, but our new security system actually allows me to look at all the spaces remotely, mm-hmm. like on my phone. So I can actually look into all of the museum exhibition galleries, you know, from home. And it's a tempting thing.
That's so a good thing cool for your potential audience to know
before they go there. But it's delightful, actually, to see, because I can even see the courtyard now. And you know, we have this really giant Jonathan Borofsky sculpture in it. And you see people, they love it. They wander around. And one of the most heartening things was in the installation of it that the, you know, the crane operator, he got really into it. He was so thrilled to be part of this installation of this sculpture. And the crew that was laying the paving bricks in the courtyard, they took such pride in being involved in this project. And they, you know, they're coming back. And you know, so I never try to guess who our audience is, because mm-hmm. it's always surprising to me who responds to what.
So. Well, we do have to take a break. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can send a tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page your questions and comments when we get back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Ever-Present of Portland, securing family memories across generations. Local services include photo scanning and converting home movies to DVD. Everpresent.com. And Maine Adaptive Sports and Recreation, offering free year-round recreation to people with physical disabilities at Sunday River, Sugarloaf, and beyond. MaineAdaptive.org.
Hello, I'm Razia Iqbal. At BBC NewsHour, we give you access to the world's largest network of correspondents to deliver unbiased news and analysis on events around the globe. From the biggest stories of the day to the important issues and trends, BBC NewsHour feeds your global curiosity. Maine Public Radio now offers a full hour of BBC NewsHour at 9 each weekday morning. I hope you can join me and my colleagues as we try to make sense of a complex world.
To see the new program schedules for both Maine Public Radio and the new Maine Public Classical Channel, you can visit mpbn.net. MPBN is proud to be a media sponsor of O'Keefe, Stettheimer, Tor, Zorak, Women Modernists in New York, the summer exhibit at the Portland Museum of Art. The exhibit is designed in part to explore perspectives on the meaning of modernism and the shared and differing experiences of being women at a crucial moment in first-wave feminism. MPBN members are eligible for 15% off tickets for the exhibit. For details, please visit mpbn.net and click on events.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Contemporary Art in Maine. With me in our studio, Dan Mills, director of the Bates College Museum and an active and successful studio artist. Suzette McAvoy is director of the Center for Maine Contemporary Art. And Lauren Fensterstock is an artist, writer, curator, critic, and educator. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with Todd, who's calling from Bristol. Hi, Todd. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Thanks. My wife, Sarah Lynn Richard, is an artist, and we started a business together almost 20 years ago, and it's a sole income for our family. Sarah's work is equine in nature. She's an equine watercolor artist, so we actually found it necessary to travel outside of the state. We go to equine festivals throughout the Northeast and even go to England and Germany once or twice a year to events that have 50,000 people or more. Highlights of Sarah's career include going to Louisville, Kentucky, and spending...
Todd, I appreciate your enthusiastic promotion of your wife, and I encourage you to post some of her work on our Maine Calling Facebook page. Do you have a question for our guests here today?
Well, I guess I'm just wondering how many people can actually make a living selling art within the state of Maine? It's been my experience mm-hmm. that most of us have to travel outside of the state.
It's a great question, and Lauren is nodding furiously.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's a great the economics make Maine, I think, a great base to make work and to have the kind of community support to produce the work. My husband is also a full-time artist, and I would say both of us make about 90% of our income, if not more, from outside the state. We've both had really good exposure within the state. I worked with, I think, one of Maine's greatest galleries, Okosisko, where I had a really dedicated dealer. But I would say... still, it's just not that big of a market. There aren't that many people here. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, in the last few years, I've found that even the big sales I've had to Maine institutions and Maine collectors were not made in Maine. So even an institution located 5 blocks from my house went to the Miami Fairs to buy a piece.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Well, Todd, thanks so much for calling. And I'm serious, if you'd like to post some of your wife's pictures, we'd love to see them on the Maine Calling Facebook page. We're going to move on to East Machias and Chris. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very, very much. I had the privilege a few years back to be in a Maine photography retrospective that Bruce Brown curated at the CMCA in Rockport. And it was a high point of my career thus far. And the art teacher here in East Machias at the local grade school has given me 2 free passes to the Farnsworth. And when I come down to that, I have every intention to seeing the new space at CMCA. And I just want to give a shout-out to Suzette McAvoy. I think I had the privilege to meet you at some point, and I'm just really excited about the whole thing.
Thank you, Chris. I do remember that meeting you as well. And Bruce was there yesterday, of course. We've named a gallery in honor of him, which seems a very fitting legacy. There's really no single individual, I think, who has been as generous and as has contributed as much to the history of contemporary art in Maine as Bruce Brown.
Chris, thanks so much for your call. We'll move on to Lila, who's calling from Warren. Hi, Lila. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. Suzette, one of the wonderful things about our communities of Maine artists who've been here for many years is their involvement with the school. And, for instance, with Robert Indiana or Ashley Bryant or even Blackie Langley, mentoring and inspiring our young people. So is CMCA going to also do that kind of reach out to the community is my first question. And could you also comment, I understand that the Blackie Langley property is now in the under the care of the Georges River Land Trust, and they're developing an art trail with Blackie Langley, and will that include your museum as well?
Oh, thank you. This is a great question, and I'm glad you brought it up. Art Lab is our signature art education program, and now thanks to Shelley Pingree and Donald Sussman, we have the Pingree Sussman Art Lab at the new CMCA. So we have a dedicated classroom space that we can use for art education classes for all ages. We continue to have a program called Art Lab for All Ages that we offer free of charge on the first Saturday of every month. And it was really designed with the idea to have no barriers to creating art, that everyone was welcome. It wasn't just parent and child. It was open to everyone of all ages. And we started that in 2011 and have continued it to this day. And it continues to be a huge success. We get people from ages 2 to 80 come to those workshops. And we've just this past 2 years started a program called Leaps of Imagination, in which we go into the local schools. And next year, thanks to a partnership with the Rockland Consolidated School District, we'll be in every elementary school in the district. So we're really thrilled about that as well. And it's a really very intensive art education program that we go in 2 times a week for 4 weeks and work very closely with the classroom teachers. So education is a very central part of what we do. It's always been a part of CMCA, and it's something that we strongly believe in. It's really about showing the kids, too, of the artists in their community. And then to the Bernard Langley piece, yes, Blackie Langley was one of our founders. He created our infamous seagull sculpture sign that was over our former building, and we have now gifted that to the Georges River Land Trust so that it will always be on display at the Langley homestead. And we have a number of pieces of his that we can display in Art Lab and in some of the other public spaces of the new CMCA as well. So keeping that connection alive.
Lila, thanks so much for your call. And Lila mentioning Robert Indiana reminded me that I wanted to ask you, Dan, what's going on at your museum, because Robert Indiana is making a presence there, isn't there?
That's right. We opened just 2 weeks ago, Robert Indiana, Now and Then, which is a major exhibition of over 70 works of Indiana's and includes his major themes, works from love, hope, eat, art, alphabet. But perhaps the most exciting thing is the world premiere of a dozen works in which Indiana has worked with Bob Dylan's lyrics to Like a Rolling Stone. So they're being seen on the for the first time here in Maine at Bates.
And from your perspective, a Robert Indiana show is an historic show.
Well, if we're thinking about contemporary art, yes. While we could parse the meaning, I mean, he's a living artist, so he's contemporary. But in the context of showing cutting edge or young artists, yeah, I would say.
What else is on tap at the Bates Museum?
So we have two other exhibitions. Probably the Show Me Something I Didn't Already Know exhibition would be Jay Bolitin's The Book of Only Enoch, which is a portfolio of 20 woodcut and etching prints by this amazing storyteller who tells the story of this boy named Only Enoch, who's been named for one of the apocryphal books, one of the books that never made it into the Old Testament, and tells the story of this boy through images and text, kind of traveling through the world and darkness and other things, and it's quite amazing. And then in our Synergy space, we have an exhibition of David Driscoll, a portfolio from our collection. The Bolitin is in our collection as well. It's called Doorway, and beautiful series of a dozen prints, which are accompanied by prose of Maine writer Michael Alpert.
Nice. We're going to move to Portland. And Patrick, hi, Patrick. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for the guests being on the program. I'm just curious. I graduated from Mecca years ago with a degree in sculpture, and what I found initially was that there is a tremendous lack of space or opportunities locally in the greater Portland area, let alone in just in general, that most of the space is for 2D work, painting, that type of thing. And I wondered if the guests would comment a little bit more on how to get the public, you know, for there to be more public space for such works. And also, I was wondering, and it's more of a philosophical question, a second part, is the fact that a lot of the art that we see in museums and galleries is more academic-minded, and I'm wondering if the guests would comment on outsider art and how we could get, the general public in on a conversation that's, you know, a lot of what we talk about in art is academic, and especially when it's high art, like, we're talking, like some of the guests had mentioned, and I would just be curious of what they had to say about, you know, that part of it.
So I want to be clear, when in the beginning, when you're talking about space, you're talking about studio space, correct?
Well, not studio space. I'm talking about space to show works of sculpture. Like my work is conceptual art that is environmentally suited just for the space at the time, and it's not a space that would more or less be, there's not a lot of floor space, so to speak, to walk around works of art in the greater Portland area.
Okay, well, Suzette, you're not in the greater Portland area, but sure you could answer this.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, I encourage you to come up and see the new CMCA because it was designed with just this problem in mind to answer this, because our former space, we just couldn't do the kind of large-scale sculpture exhibitions or installations because of the physical constraints of the space that we had. But the new CMCA was designed to handle three-dimensional works of just about any scale, any weight. And, you know, the main gallery is 50 by 52 feet. The front wall is 20 feet high. The ceiling is 26 feet. It's 16 feet to the underside of the trusses. So it is an enormous open space. And right now where it's hosting an exhibition by Jonathan Borofsky, that is a site-specific installation. In other words, that it is both 3D and 2D work that was installed and designed specifically for this one-time show within that space. So it does exactly what the caller was talking about. It was really using the space as part of the creation of the work. And then we have this wonderful courtyard now that's open to the public that has a large-scale abstract sculpture by Jonathan Borofsky that's completely open to the public and really invites the public in and to participate in the work of the museum. So it's a very inviting and welcoming kind of gesture to the community. And I think it attracts people who don't necessarily think that they know or like contemporary art, but it just it's a way to for the museum to bridge that divide.
All right. And either of you, Dan or Lauren, have thoughts about his question about academic contemporary art? I'm not quite sure where he's going, but you all seem to be to get it. That's what he was talking.
Gosh, you know, as someone who represents an academic institution, it seems like all eyes may be on me. But if we mean academic as in trained, you know, many artists out there have had some form of training. It doesn't mean that we don't also have interest in or occasionally show works that are broadly defined by the term outsider art, artists who perhaps haven't had the same kind of formal training. But I'm actually thinking more about the space issue. Mm-hmm. If I can go back to that, some of the things that are great about the state of Maine is, I mean, there are a certain number of institutions, and I think most of us have a commitment to exhibiting sculpture as well as other media. I don't think any of the major institutions aren't interested in sculpture. But there's also this amazing infrastructure throughout the state of Maine, and the museum at Bates has essentially co-opted part of the Bates Mill complex to expand one of our exhibitions, a Dutch artist, Franji Kielaars, by adding a 40,000 square foot space and commissioning work in that space that was about the textiles that used to be made in there. And I think of artists who have taken the initiative to find space for their site specific
like Amy Stacy Curtis. Mm-hmm.
Amy Stacy Curtis. Last year, Gail Scudera and Kristen Malin did a piano roll project for about 24 artists, mostly connected to Maine, where they found a space and created an exhibition. So there are opportunities there.
I wanted to address the academic question. Certainly the work that CMCA shows would in no stretch of the imagination be defined as academic, because we don't, when I think of it in terms of academic, in terms of traditional work or, traditionally representational work or safe work, we take a lot of risks with the kind of work that we show. And while we do work primarily with professional artists who have had academic training, who have gone to art school or think of themselves as professional artists, we also have had shows of outsider artists at the former CMCA. And I'm a huge passionate fan of outsider and folk art. My graduate work was actually in American folk art, and I always say I got to contemporary art actually through the back door, because during graduate school I did work with a contemporary folk artist, Ralph Fasanella, and through my connection with him I got more and more interested actually in contemporary work and working with living artists. And so it's there's a strong connection, and certainly here in Maine there's a strong connection between American folk art and American modernism, coming out of the Algonquin school. And so it's a strain that is certainly strong here in Maine even to today.
We have to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Casella, dedicated to improving air quality for all Mainers through a commitment to reduce its carbon footprint. Casella, giving resources new life. Bay Chamber Concerts Summer Concert Series and Festival in Rockport, July 13th through August 21st. Tickets at baychamberconcerts.org. And Roosevelt Campobello International Park, the summer home of the Roosevelts. Free admission across the bridge from Lubeck. FDR.net.
Intelligence Squared US, where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues. The next topic up for debate: has the president usurped the constitutional power of Congress?
If the president is trying to advance the goal of the statute, then he's clearly not usurping Congress's power.
Right. Well, good intentions are no substitute for good constitutional law.
That's all coming up on Intelligence Squared US.
And you can join us for that program in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Barbara Cook talks about going from Broadway ingenue to sophisticated cabaret singer. She was in the original Broadway production of The Music Man and in Candide and Carousel. She's written a new memoir, and at 88, is still performing. Join us.
You can hear Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock right here on the stations of Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Contemporary Art in Maine, with me in our studio, Lauren Fensterstock, an artist, writer, curator, critic, and educator. Dan Mills is director of the Bates College Museum. Suzette McAvoy is director of the Center for Maine Contemporary Art, which just reopened in its brand new building in Rockland over the past weekend. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Suzette, have there been studies done on the economic impact of contemporary art in Maine? Is that something that's even measurable?
Yes. Well, in planning the new museum, we had an economic impact study done, and it shows that within the first year of operation, the new CMCA will have a total economic impact of nearly $35 million on the state of Maine. You know, there's really a rollout ripple effect between the dollars spent at a museum and our visitors, and certainly now with the Farnsworth Art Museum and the Strand Theater, it makes Rockland more of a destination, one which people will come and stay overnight. So that has, you know, as I mentioned, ripple effect out into the larger community. And then, you know, just even the vendors and the services that we engage with in the operation of the museum, the printers, you know, our printer is in Lewiston, you know, the framer that we use, the shipping, all of that stuff has a larger economic impact than one might think of in terms of the arts. And I also say that, you know, our biennial exhibition, we had 780 people apply this year, 780 individual artists that self-identify as Maine artists. So that's a large section of the population. I mean, I think the Portland Museum has even more. So it's a really maybe a much bigger economic impact than the larger public might really recognize.
The 780 who self-identify and are, I don't want to say good enough, but are of the caliber that they would even be applying for your biennial. That's a huge number. And that leads me to one of the questions I have for you, Lauren, and you, Dan, is if you're a young artist and you're starting out and you're listening to this program today and you think, oh my gosh, there's so much competition out there. How do I get people to take me seriously? How do I get my vision out there before an audience? What advice do you have?
Well, one thing I would say is be patient and take it slow. I think not every opportunity is an opportunity. And I think just relishing each success as you have it. I started locally. You know, the first step is getting a studio, being nice to people, seeing how spaces operate, and then maybe moving, you know, from local to statewide and then into sort of broader markets. But I think it's very much about getting out there and just getting your name known, talking to people, paying attention to what's happening and trying to be a part of the community.
Dan, thoughts?
Oh, gosh. I guess I would say to make and show and to not be afraid to work your way up, to if you're interested in exhibiting in certain venues, to do your homework on them and understand what their interests are and whether you make sense there. To figure out your communities of artists, which might be geographic, but it may also be people who have interests similar to you who aren't anywhere near here. And where are they showing and how do you engage with them and how can that help you kind of grow and grow your making?
All right, we're going to move to Warren, who's calling from Rockland. Hi, Warren. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to make a plug for Rockland. I think it's very exciting that CMCA is here, now located in Rockland. I think artists young and old are attracted to this place because it's a real town, a real small city, which has the feeling of authenticity, still affordable, somewhat gritty, non-elitist kind of environment. I think that's why Rockland's become an important place for artists to gather, to work, and to exhibit. That's my point. Thank you.
I think Suzette agrees with you.
And can I add a final point about encouraging young artists and what they might do? I say use social media and use it to promote your work. Three of the younger artists that I've tapped for exhibitions in the last 2 years at CMCA, I was first introduced to their work on Facebook and Instagram, and I wouldn't have known of their work if they weren't actively using social media in a smart way to promote their work.
Warren, thanks so much for your call. A Facebook post from Bridget goes back to something we were talking about earlier in the program. She writes, I think an appreciation for contemporary art actually starts during early childhood, believe it or not. We are born with an innate sensibility for abstraction, and respecting that relationship to self-expression would definitely show up in adults who, as your guest said, don't look for answers when viewing art. And Bridget is with Youth and Family Outreach at Waterfall Arts in Belfast. Would you all agree that this is something that's more innate to us as children than when we grow up and we've been educated in how to look at the world?
I think so. I think everyone has starts out as a creative, and students, children express themselves, whether it's learning to speak or write or make images or make things. So I think so.
Yeah, kids don't come with any preconceptions, so they don't dismiss it out of hand like so many adults do. They just come in and look and find what appeals to them and respond to it. We had a lot of kids yesterday at CMCA, and it was really delightful to see them engage with, some really sort of challenging work to adults. But, to kids, they just found it all fun and interesting.
They're also very honest.
They can
critics.
Say ew.
Okay, we're going to go to Margie calling from Jonesboro. Hi, Margie, go ahead.
Hi, well, I've been painting since I was 14, and I think that art is fabulous for everybody. And I have like 28 paintings. They're all over my walls. You name the topic, I got it. They're big, big ones and whatever. People come in, why don't you sell them? I go, no, I cover my walls. But I mean, they're really, really big. And one thing I wanted to say is my project next is a 120-year picture that I saw of Machias, Maine, on Main Street, that the horses are eating at the trough, and all the buildings are there, and there's no cars available. And that just struck me. I have to be struck before I do a painting. But I'll tell you something, that is something else.
Well, Margie, anyway, thanks so much for calling. Thank you. Thank you for calling. Let me ask you, Suzette, as you plan in the future, as you plan what exhibits, what are you looking for? Are you looking for a balance between sculpture and painting and performance art? Or are you looking for people from different regions of Maine? I mean, how are you balancing? I know in a theater, for example, you have a budget. And if you have one production with 25 actors, your next production might have one actor because this is the hand that you've been dealt. How does one think about planning years out for a museum of your caliber?
There is exactly that thought process going in, that you try to get a balance of shows crossing different mediums, group shows versus solo shows. I try to have work that may be a little bit more approachable, balanced against tougher work. This first round of exhibitions was selected with the idea of representing three different generations, our past, present, and future. So we have Alex Katz, a really preeminent painter representing, the older generation. Jonathan Borofsky representing the middle generation, and Rollin Leonard, the younger generation. And all of their work being very contemporary and very much part of now, because I think that contemporary art really crosses generations. It's not necessarily about the age of the artist or, the fact that they're painting. It's a matter of what the concept and the energy in the work is, that it's addressing the culture of today. And all three of those artists do that.
Okay, and let me turn this to you a little bit, Lauren, because I know you do both sculpture that, as you said, people purchase and put in their homes, and then large-scale installation work. Are you, as an artist, kind of trying to balance, well, I need to create this many sculptures to pay the mortgage and buy the groceries, and then also be hoping for this incredible installation piece maybe 5 years, 10 years out?
Absolutely. It was interesting, the caller from before, I was sympathizing with him as a sculptor. I'm always jealous of painters who are sort of sending their things out. You hang it on the wall, and I'm always driving like a giant box truck full of sculpture around the country. I tend to work on a lot of projects at once. Suzette was mentioning multi-year planning, so I may be planning shows that are 4 or 5 years out. And I'll try to do a mix of large-scale installation that's also often temporary, not saleable, with some smaller works that might be in a commercial gallery that could go into an institution or a home permanently. I do a lot of drawing, which is an important part of my process, but also become kind of accessible purchases for most people. And so I think as those, I can express different ideas in the different formats, but they also give me different lengths of process and sort of different levels of pricing to get the work out to different kinds of places. So it is a little bit of, it's sort of like a relationship. You can't get everything from one person. And so, I mean, with the artwork, it's similar that intellectually, creatively, and economically, I'm trying to make a holistic picture of all of my activities together.
Is it hard for you to dismantle an installation piece?
I don't know. It's such hard work. By the end, I just want it to go away.
Really?
Sometimes. It's interesting. I mean, with the installations, because I have a very tiny studio in downtown Portland, I make everything in a very modular way. So I'll make, you know, components, and they get boxed, and they go in Noya's storage space. And then, you know, they're assembled on site. So I just did this piece in The Hague, and, you know, I was there. I finished it. And 2 hours after finishing the piece, I flew away. And so often, you know, I only see the pieces afterwards in photos and documentation. So I'm used to saying goodbye. And when they come back, there's problems. So it's better to dismantle.
Okay. Well, I think that's going to be our last word today. Thank you all so much for such a wonderful conversation. Suzette McAvoy, director of the Center for Maine Contemporary Art, Lauren Fensterstock, artist, writer, curator, critic, and educator, and Dan Mills, director of the Bates College Museum. He is also an active and successful studio artist. We've put information about all three artists here and the museum, both artists and the museum, on our MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page, and encourage you to check that out. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Jonathan Smith answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives, at mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, join me for a conversation about sexual assault and addressing what has become known as the rape culture in our society. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.